Good evening. I'm John Chancellor, NBC News in New York. David Brinkley is in Washington and will be along shortly. And here is the news. The official death toll in the East Pakistan disaster today climbed to 150,000, with indications that it will go much, much higher than that. Relief supplies have begun to arrive at the capital, Dhaka. One American plane landed today with 90,000 pounds of supplies, but the situation in the outlying areas remains desperate. There are more than 1 million refugees from the storm who have neither water, food, nor shelter, and starvation is the biggest problem in the countryside. The cataclysmic storms hit East Pakistan 6 days ago, and only today the government of India said it would allow Pakistani military aircraft from West Pakistan to land and refuel on the long flight east. 4 American helicopters will arrive tomorrow. The Pakistanis have asked for 30 more, but it is doubtful that enough help can arrive in time to do much for the survivors of the worst storm of the century.
The first plane loads of relief supplies were from some of the smaller countries. The bigger countries, including the United States, were not far behind. The West German Air Force planes made 2 round trips to bring in tents, blankets, and clothing. Some of the supplies were donated by the West German government. Others came from private relief organizations. Because of the threat of cholera and other disease, medical supplies are a priority item. Nine and a half tons of medicine, vaccine, and other supplies were flown in aboard a Kuwait Airlines jet. The seats were taken out of the passenger compartment to make room for the cargo. A medical team of 7 doctors also came from Kuwait. They will be dispatched to the stricken areas. The supplies will be stored in Dhaka until they can be moved to the disaster area. Relief officials are counting on helicopters donated by other countries, including the United States, to move as many of the supplies as possible. But the devastated area covers almost 3,000 square miles, and no more than 10 helicopters are expected to be available. The supplies the helicopters cannot take will have to be transported by trucks or river barges to the coast before they can be distributed to survivors. Some of them have been isolated for 1 week. That is the most frustrating aspect of this gigantic relief operation. The fear that for many it may be too late.
It is estimated that there are more than 1 million survivors on East Pakistan's battered offshore islands. The bodies of those who died when the wind and water hit now menace the lives of those who survived. The unburied bodies threaten to contaminate drinking water and touch off epidemics of typhoid and cholera. Already there are some cholera cases. The foreign helicopters now on the way are badly needed to bring in medicine. Pakistan now has only 2 planes and 1 chopper working. East Pakistani newspapers charge the relief program as being mishandled. The other great need is food. People complain survivors have to eat contaminated rice while a badly coordinated international relief effort worries about blankets. Throughout the world, people and governments are giving, perhaps too late for many survivors. George Montgomery, NBC News, reporting.
The worst typhoon in that country's recorded history bellowed across the Philippines today, the eye of the storm crossing directly over the capital, Manila. The death toll in that disaster stands now at 38. 300 are injured. The Philippine government has declared a state of calamity. Winds were clocked at 120 miles an hour, and hailstones as big as baseballs fell on Manila. David?
The casualty figures were put out today in Saigon. Last week, 32 Americans were killed and 273 wounded. In Vietnam, a U.S. Marine helicopter was returning to Da Nang from a rescue mission when it crashed into the side of a mountain today and killed all 15 men aboard. One of them was Lieutenant Colonel William Leftwich of Memphis, a much decorated commander and Tennessee's Man of the Year 5 years ago. Another session of the peace talks in Paris today, no progress. The North Vietnamese complained about American reconnaissance flights over their land, and the Americans defended them.
This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, November 19th. 1970.
Cranberry juice for breakfast?
Cranberry juice, great for breakfast. Tingly. Mm-hmm.
Cranberry juice gives me more food energy than orange juice.
My customers, start every day with Ocean Spray.
Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail has more food energy than orange juice.
Orange juice? We like cranberry juice better.
Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail, the other breakfast juice.
The My Lai military trials continued today. At Fort Benning, Georgia, in the trial of Lieutenant William Kelly, the prosecution continued to build up its case that there was, in fact, a massacre at My Lai. An attempt will be made later to tie Kelly to the killings. Witnesses today said they saw bodies of Vietnamese civilians strewn along a trail at the entrance to My Lai Hamlet. At Fort Hood, Texas, Army Sergeant David Mitchell today wept on the witness stand and said he didn't kill anybody at My Lai, and that while he rounded up a group of civilians and put them in a ditch, he didn't personally see anyone shot that day.
Sergeant Mitchell told his attorney last night that he wanted to take the stand, that he wanted to state publicly that he is not guilty of attempting to murder women and children at My Lai. When he took the witness stand today, he was asked only one question by his attorney, O.C. Brown. Did you shoot at any Vietnamese people near a ditch at My Lai 4 on March 16, 1968? The answer was loud and clear. No, sir, Mr. Brown, I did not. Prosecutor Captain Michael Swan took over. Swan challenged, Lieutenant Kelly told you to shove those people in the ditch and shoot them, didn't he? Mitchell's voice rose. No, sir. He told me to leave them there and go set up a perimeter. As tears streamed down his face, he said no. He did not see anyone shot at My Lai. His wife and his mother listened, shaking with sobs, as they heard him say he was 50 or 60 yards from the ditch, heard firing, but didn't turn around to look. I've been thinking this over for a year, he said, as he wiped away his tears. I'm not sure what happened that day. But, sir, I know what I did. He said a witness who testified he was at the ditch was lying. You fired two magazines, didn't you? Swan said. Sir, I did some firing that day, Mitchell replied. I killed some animals in the village. With that, the defense rested its case. The seven officers on the panel asked that portions of testimony given a month ago by three prosecution witnesses be read again to them. There was a conference at the bench, as Brown objected, saying that such a reading would give more weight to the Army's case. He was overruled. The earlier testimony, which said Mitchell had fired into the women and children in the ditch, was read back to the jury. Tomorrow, final arguments, and the panel will begin its deliberations. Don Oliver, NBC News in Temple, Texas.
At Fort Benning, Georgia, the court-martial of Lieutenant William Kelly inched along. More government witnesses were heard, primarily to back up previous testimony. John Paul was the radio operator for Captain Ernest Medina, Kelly's commanding officer. Paul testified that he and Medina together witnessed a soldier shooting a boy of about 8 years old who was trying to run away. He said Medina did not react to the killing. Gerald Hemming, who was a demolitions expert, told the jury he saw the bodies of women, children, and a few old men at My Lai. He said there were bullet holes in the bodies, indicating they were not killed by artillery. Hemming also said My Lai was well fortified, but he was not aware of any hostile fire. Another demolitions expert, Sergeant Calvin Hawkins, said the unit encountered no resistance at My Lai. Sergeant Hawkins denied ever having told Army investigators that he thought some of the dead villagers were the victims of artillery fire, although the defense read that earlier statement back to him. The question of orders given at My Lai that day came out for the first time in the testimony of Sergeant First Class Leo Maroney. He said Captain Medina had instructed two of the platoons to destroy the crops and buildings of My Lai.
There are still about 75 or so witnesses who have to testify. At the rate things are going now, this court-martial won't be concluded for many, many weeks. Robert Goralski, NBC News at Fort Benning, Georgia.
In the Middle East, the heaviest fighting since the September Civil War broke out last night in Amman, Jordan. The army and the Palestinian guerrillas exchanged fire for 13 hours before a truce meeting could be arranged. David?
Congress passed a bill to put a limit on the money spent on political television commercials. President Nixon vetoed it. His critics said he did so because he plans to run in 72, presumably will have plenty of money, as his Democratic opponent probably won't, and he doesn't want to lose that advantage. Whatever the reason, the Senate votes Monday on whether or not to override him. Senator Goodell of New York was urging the Senate today to override. He said to the other members, quote, "If you've had the experience of running against a millionaire, you should try running against two of them, as I did." Goodell lost. There is a growing national movement to pressure, in every way possible, the North Vietnamese to at least give out some news on the Americans they hold prisoner.
There is a growing movement to get better treatment for American prisoners in North Vietnam. Students, like these at the University of Nebraska in Omaha, are signing petitions and sending letters. Halftime of the Army-Navy game will be devoted to the prisoners. And now Northwestern Bell Telephone Company, which serves Nebraska, Iowa, North and South Dakota, and Minnesota, is asking its 2 million subscribers to help. Along with this month's bill is going a postcard addressed to the president of North Vietnam.
This is photo on the front of it. We created the little caption, "Do You Really Care?" It says, "Dear Mr. President, I appeal to you and your government and to your allies too. Treat all prisoners of war humanely as specified in the provisions of the Geneva Convention. Release an official list of all prisoners held. Provide information about those known to be dead. Release the seriously sick and wounded, and allow a free flow of mail. I ask your help in the name of humanity." Then there's a blank for your name and address. Well, we are beginning to get response from our subscribers. In fact, one of them just arrived this morning from a Mrs. Dennis Thomte here in Omaha, and she says, among other things, she says, As you may know, my
brother has been held prisoner by the North Vietnamese for 3.5 years. I truly feel that through the efforts of the American people, and especially with the assistance of companies such as yours, we can impress upon Hanoi that this country really does care about the fate of just 1,600 American men. They have to recognize that this country isn't going to stand for this kind of thing.
What sort of response do you want?
Well, obviously, first of all, humane treatment for them. If they're going to be prisoners, then at least treat them as men and not as animals.
400 or 500 cards a day pass through the main Omaha post office, so people are signing them, and they are sending them back. Hanoi apparently is paying some attention to all the furor over the prisoners, because for the first time, wives who had never received a single communication from their prisoner husbands, who in fact didn't even know if they were dead or alive, are now starting to receive letters from them. This is John Dantzley, NBC News in Omaha.
Hello, I'm Dr. Joyce Brothers. You know, little girls learn to be women by imitating their mothers. And nothing gives them more joy than doing the very same things they see you doing. Well, I've discovered some wonderful Kenner toys little girls love.
Kenner's Super Easy Bake Oven is just like yours, with every wanted feature, even a timer that rings, and special safety features for little cooks. It comes with an assortment of Just Add Water Betty Crocker mixes that make it easy to use the new supersize oven to whip up a delicious supersize cake.
Of course, after slaving all day in the kitchen, your little girl may want to fix herself up before dinner, again, the way you do.
Kenner's Easy Curl Vanity comes with warmer rollers that gently curl her hair, a two-drawer vanity to hold all the curlers, and a very grown-up light-up mirror.
Kenner toys. They make child's play a little more than just fun.
In the Sharon Tate murder trial today, the defense announced suddenly it was resting its case and presenting no witnesses at all. But then the three young women on trial, along with Charles Manson, stood up and said, regardless of what the lawyer said, they wanted to testify. Manson himself, looking inscrutable, said nothing.
Almost everybody connected with the Sharon Tate murder trial had been waiting for the defense to open its case this morning. The defendants seemed unconcerned. There was a motion for acquittal on all charges. That was denied, and the judge asked the defense to call its first witness. At that point, the four defense attorneys stood up and said, "The defense rests." Almost immediately, Patricia Krenwinkel, one of three Manson family members on trial, rose, saying, "Your Honor, I would like to testify." After a hurried consultation, the judge ruled all three young women on trial with Manson would be allowed to testify, even though their lawyers were against that.
An attorney has to do what he feels is right for his client. You certainly can take into consideration what your client feels, what his desires are, but ultimately you have to follow the dictates of your conscience, and I honestly and sincerely feel that the attorneys in this case followed the dictates of their conscience, that they felt that it was not definitely and distinctly in the best interest of these defendants to take the stand in their own behalf.
The defendants agreed that Susan Atkins would be the first on the stand, but her attorney, Dave Shin, refused to examine her. Shin felt anything he asked might incriminate his client, and he would not do that. The judge again recessed the session to determine whether the lawyers can be compelled to question defendants, even though that may damage their positions. Tom Snyder, NBC News, Los Angeles.
The American play, O Calcutta, is now running in London, and there, as here, most of the cast, through most of the play, is stark naked. Yesterday, they complained the theater was cold and said if they didn't turn up the heat, they'd put their clothes on, which meant the management would not sell another ticket. Today, they turned up the heat. John?
At the kidnapping murder trial of Black Panther Bobby Seale in New Haven today, they seated the first juror. In 3 days of jury selection, 41 prospective jurors were excused, and the first to be picked is a 44-year-old white mailman named Franklin Bilger. He was chosen after making a somewhat cryptic comment. He said, "In my mind, I'd be too good a juror, and I hope I'm not picked." But he was. In New Orleans today, more than 100 heavily armed policemen using an armored car surrounded a building containing a group of Black Panthers who said they were ready for a shootout with the cops.
Police began moving into the Desire Street housing project in New Orleans early today after evacuating many of the 400 residents who lived near Black Panther headquarters. Their action came after the New Orleans Housing Authority claimed the Panthers were occupying an apartment in the project without the agency's consent and without paying rent. There was some sporadic sniper fire when police moved in, but no one was injured. The Panther house was fortified. Police said they had ammunition and weapons. Police promptly moved in an armored car with loudspeakers in an effort to persuade residents of the area to leave.
Would you people please move off the corner on Desire Street, please? For your own safety. We're asking you to move, please.
Many residents still refused to leave, and throughout the day, about 150 to 300 angry people remained on the scene, with the Panthers continuing to hole up inside their apartment. Several times, Superintendent of Police Clarence Geruso talked with representatives of the Panthers and urged them to leave without success. Later this afternoon, there was a firebombing and more sniper fire. One bullet, meant for police, wounded a teenage Negro. Tonight, police withdrew from the area and gave attorneys for the Panthers 24 hours to fight the removal of the black militants in court. This is Joe Glover reporting from New Orleans.
I'm a waitress, chef, chauffeur, teacher, lover, nurse. I'm a housewife. And I love it. I love what I do because I take good care of myself. I exercise, get plenty of rest, try to watch my diet. And to make sure I get enough vitamins and iron, I start every morning with a Geritol tablet. Geritol is one of the nice things I do for myself. And with all my jobs, I need all the help I can get.
Geritol, one of the good things you can do for yourself.
11:10 p.m. Can't sleep. 11:30, wide awake. 11:45, still awake. When you take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep and feel you need help, take Somonex as directed for 100% safe sleep. Somonex is the only leading sleep aid with three medical ingredients to quickly relax you and help you get to sleep. When you take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep, take Somonex and sleep, sleep, sleep.
NBC Nightly News continues after this announcement.
Cranberry juice for breakfast?
For breakfast?
We got tired of orange juice every day, so I tried Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail. What tastes better and has more food energy than orange juice?
Jim likes his cranberry juice straight. Jimmy mixes his with orange juice.
Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail has more food energy than orange juice.
Refreshing new taste, too.
Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Cocktail, the other breakfast juice.
Tonight, the House passed a bill to put limits on imports of textiles and shoes and possibly other products, and the disagreements were vociferous. It was the first time in a generation all these arguments had been heard, and debates about tariffs, protectionism, and free trade had a slightly 19th century sound to them. Advocates said cheap textiles from the Orient hurt the textile business in this country. Opponents said maybe so, but the U.S. exports a great deal, and if it puts quotas on imports, other countries would put quotas on American exports. Back in the days when they smoked cigars on the floors of Congress, carried silver toothpicks, wore Edwardian mustaches, and still felt a need to defame the English kings, then they were arguing free trade almost precisely as today, and often in the same words. In this case, Mr. Nixon promised the southern states he would try to reduce the imports of textiles to help their industries. But once that bag is open, Congress members like to protect industries in their own states. Shoes, for example, against imports from Italy and other places. American wages are rising so fast, it is increasingly hard to compete with lower-paid foreign workers, particularly the Japanese, and that helped put the steam in today's debate. The president asked protection only for textiles. It is said that if too much else is added to the bill, he may veto it. But that'll depend on what it says when it's finished. It still has to go through the Senate, where there are many members who would like to give it a decent burial. John?
There was a lot of talk in the Senate today about the president's latest request for a big increase in foreign aid, which includes $155 million for Cambodia. Senator Fulbright says this is so similar to the way we became involved in Vietnam that he is sending investigators to Cambodia before his Foreign Relations Committee acts on the bill. Republican Senate leader Hugh Scott said failure to pass the bill might make it more difficult to withdraw from Vietnam. And with considerable candor, Scott linked the money for Cambodia with the $500 million earmarked in aid for Israel. Referring to anti-war senators, he said, if they want aid to Israel, they had better pass the whole bill.
While most of you like the taste of Benson & Hedges 100s, some of you really appreciate the 3, 4, maybe even 5 moments more they give you. Benson and Hedges 100s, 3, 4, maybe even 5 moments more than king size.
Dean Caldwell and Warren Harding, that intrepid pair of California mountain climbers, spent the night last night at the top of El Capitan, having taken 27 days to climb its sheer 3,000-foot face. Some people think they're a pair of fools, while others think they're heroes. Caldwell and Harding don't belong to either group. They climbed El Capitan because it was there, and they will climb other mountains because they're there.
They were back down off the mountain this morning, relaxing with friends at breakfast. Dean Caldwell, who said his feet hurt from all the rain they got, he has a limp now. Warren Harding, who already had a limp from an auto accident, but still climbed. And Harding's mother, who calls her 46-year-old son my little boy. Harding and Caldwell did what had never been done. But though they take their climbing seriously, they refuse to take themselves seriously.
For the world, watching the men climb this mountain, it was a drama, an adventure. For the men, it was a farce. A farce. They have a motto for themselves, and it is always farcing. They translate that into a mock Latin, and it comes out Semper Farcissimus. When Warren Harding reached the top of the mountain yesterday and was asked what his first words were, that's what he said. Semper Farcissimus.
Why in God's green earth do you guys climb mountains?
Because we're insane. There can't be any other reason.
Can you honestly say you enjoyed this climb, Warren?
Oh, yeah. It's the biggest thing I've ever done.
Can't prove
it. It's really hard to say why you do something like this. There's a feeling of happiness that comes over you that's quite overwhelming. A person feels almost like exploding.
So they are down now, relaxing and thinking about a mountain in Peru. Semper Farcissimus. Jack Perkins, NBC News, Yosemite.
The Senate this afternoon passed and sent to the White House a new farm bill, which, for the first time ever, sets some limits on the amount of subsidies a farmer can receive from the government, $55,000 a year in this case. Transworld Airlines said today it is laying off between 1,500 and 2,000 of its 43,000 employees between now and January 1st. American Airlines reported it had let go 700 of its 37,000 people in the last few weeks, and earlier this year, Pan American laid off 2,300 people. Prices moved up a little today on the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials gained more than a point and a half, and the value of an average share gained 4 cents. But on the American Exchange, an average share lost 3 cents. David?
Congress is, of course, back in Washington at work, arguing about free trade, $500 million in military aid, and many other things, all complicated, controversial, and expensive. Well, by contrast, for those of you who have awaited the news from Kabul, Afghanistan, here it is. The Parliament of Afghanistan came into its current session 1 year ago, and up to today, it has done absolutely nothing. It has not raised taxes or even indeed raised the subject. It has passed no laws against anything. The members did complain a little about the Minister of Information because they said he had not produced enough flattering publicity for them. But other than that, they have done nothing. And the country continues to get along about as well as it ever did. Thank you, and good night for NBC News.